This is week three of our series on Life is Too Short. In Psalm 90, we find Moses praying a prayer. This prayer has been in his heart by seeing, observing how short life is. He was surrounded by death. Remember, we said last week that approximately 1 million of the Israelites died during the 40 years of travel throughout the wilderness unnecessarily. It was because of their unbelief and their unwillingness to go in and take the land when they were right there after 11 months. But because they would not take the land, because they would not believe God, God said, if you don't want the land, you will not receive this land. You will wander for 40 years. So the next 39 years, they wander. Approximately 70 persons a day must have died. You know, that had to have been a very, very depressing kind of wandering. When you think about 70 of your friends, every single day you're burying 70 more, 490 a week. The numbers just kept on and on and on. And out of this, here's what Moses writes. And not only writes, this is a prayer that he prayed, surrounded by death and the reality of death and the shortness of life. He said, teach us to number our days and to recognize how few they are. Help us to spend them as we should. Look at that prayer once again. I think it's a good prayer for all of us. Teach us to number our days and recognize how few they are. Help us to spend them as we should. It was as though he is praying and he is saying, God, show us. Show us how to spend daily life. Show us how to spend our energy and our time. Show us, Lord, how to live every single day that you give to us to the full. It was through observation and personal experience that Moses had come now to the conclusion that life was short. Matter of fact, it was critically short. I would even go so far as to say Moses is declaring life is too short not to enjoy every God-given day, too short to go to bed with anxiety and worry and fret in your heart. Yes, it is too short to be angry, too short to hold a grudge. It is too short to major on minors. Now, with that as our backdrop this morning, I want you to listen carefully what Jesus had to say in Matthew chapter 23 to the religious leaders of his day. And I assure you, as we look at Matthew chapter 23, Jesus minces no words. Listen to what he says. Now, Matthew 23 in your Bibles, starting with verse 23, reading through verse 28. Woe to you. Now, anytime you see that word woe, it's a warning. It is a warning of impending judgment. There is coming danger. There is calamity that is on its way. And Jesus calls it for what he is. Calamity is on its way. Be careful, be cautious. I warn you, impending judgment is coming. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. Now, the word hypocrite there is literally an actor. It comes from a Greek word that talks about those that go on stage and they can play various roles. He said, all you're doing in life is you have gotten so caught up in playing roles, you don't even know who you are any longer. So, whoa, danger is coming. You teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites, you two-faced individuals, you give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without rejecting the former. You should have done both otherwise. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat but swallow a camel. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, then the outside also will be clean. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. Remember, I told you, Jesus minces no words here. You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. Now let's go back to verse 23. It's going to be our text. Verse 23, Jesus says, "Woe to you, danger is coming, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites, you two-faced people, you actors. You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without rejecting the former." Now, Matthew chapter 23 records a series of searing rebukes. Each of these have been directed by Jesus to the scribes and the Pharisees of his day, which were the religious leaders. These pompous religious leaders, they loved to present themselves in the marketplace as being God's very spiritual elite. To that end, they made themselves highly visible. They would parade through the streets of Jerusalem, coming and going from the temple, wearing their decorative religious garments. They loved to be seen and heard of men. The Bible says when they would pray long, loud prayers in public so they could be heard of all and be identified as being truly big-time spiritual people. In short, however, it was only a show. Friends, life is too short to major on minors for only a show. Let me ask you this morning, what does painting the hull of a sinking ship have in common with wallpapering the bedroom in a burning house? When you think of those two, both, of course, are ludicrous examples of majoring on minors. When a ship is sinking, or a house is on fire, more important priorities must come to the surface than painting or wallpapering. In the same sense, the scribes and the Pharisees, they spiritually were majoring on minors. They loved to get together and split theological hairs, making much ado over very, very little in the eyes of God. Now listen once again with that in mind to our text. Verse 23, "Woe, danger is coming, you teachers of the law, Pharisees, you hypocrites, you're two-faced. You've got one face for public, another face for the temple, and another one for home. You hypocrites, you actors, you give a tenth of your spices, your mint, your dill, your cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, which is justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter, that is, you should have practiced justice, mercy, and faithfulness without neglecting the former, which was their tithe." Now, according to Leviticus chapter 27, when God gave the instruction regarding the tithe, it was merely to be something that was a representative. God has blessed me. I'm grateful for the blessing of the Lord. So I bring back a tenth of that to the Lord, whether it's the wheat, the oil, the livestock, the produce, which would have been, you know, the monetary system basically of that day. In their zeal, however, these Pharisees, these two-faced people that Jesus talks about, these actors, the Pharisees extended this commandment to include the very smallest of all herbs, when in reality it was to be the produce, the major produce, and so on. They took this simple law of God concerning the tithe, the 10%, and they expanded it, and they expanded it, and they expanded it, and they sat down and they wrote new rules and new laws far beyond what God ever intended, until they came up with a document which I have seen. And this document is about the size of a modern Milwaukee phone book. It's about that thick. So a simple little phrase becomes so big. They did the same thing with the dietary laws. In the Old Testament, it says, thou shalt not boil a kid, which is a small goat, in its mother's milk. And out of that, they have written reams and reams and reams and laws of every kind that are dietary regarding meat and dairy. And these laws are in place yet today in Israel. And you do not violate them. They are the law of the land. And so they would sit down and they would take and nitpick one with another, coming up with more and more and more ways to apply the simple command of the Lord. If the Lord has blessed you, bring back 10% of the produce, the crops, and the blessing of the Lord, present it to him. But they kept on, kept on, kept on. They prided themselves literally in counting their dill seed out and separating 1 in 10 for God. And so they would have all these dill seed, all these small little seeds that are so small that if a wind would come by, literally blow them off the table. But they would take the dill seeds and what we would call today fennel seed, and they would take and count them out. 1 for God, 9 for me. 1 for God, 9 for me. And it was a process, and they just kept on building and building on this thing, and they became very prideful about their acts. I can't even imagine how time-consuming it must have been to count out all of these small little seeds. Try it sometime. I'm sure that in your cabinet at home, you've got some small little seed. Try counting them out and see what it would be like. Now, if you carefully look at the text here, you'll discover that it is rather evident that Jesus now is not criticizing the meticulous attention they were giving to the tithe, but rather, here's what Jesus said, you should have practiced the latter. And I add in, so you can see it on the screen there, you should have practiced the latter, which is justice, mercy, and faithfulness, added by me for definition here in the service this morning. You should have practiced the latter, which is justice, mercy, and faithfulness, without neglecting the former. And Jesus said that was the tithe. Here's what Jesus was simply addressing, the lives of these people. And that was a well-balanced Christian life. He said, I want you living balanced lives, that you do not do one to the neglect of the other. He wasn't saying you should take and give all yourself to justice, mercy, and all of this without doing the tithe. He's saying it's not either or, it's both, but doing both within balance and understanding, which is ultimately the more important. So his message then in a nutshell is this. Be careful not to invert God's priorities. Be careful not to call unimportant what God calls important, and do not call important what God says is of lesser importance. Let's put that in a modern vernacular today. It would be for me to say, a $1 bill is more valuable than a $100 bill. And you would argue and say, no, it's not. A $100 bill has 100 times the worth and the value of a $1 bill. But if I were to sit there and say, no, I've inverted all of this, the $1 bill is more important than the 100. This is what they were doing with the law. They were inverting what was more important to God, and they were majoring on minors. In Luke chapter 18, there's a fascinating account. Take your Bibles and turn there. We'll put it on the screen for you as well. But in Luke chapter 18, Jesus expands on what the dangers of the Pharisaical spirit is. And I want you to see what he says here in Luke chapter 18, starting with verse 9. Here's where this pride, here's where dwelling on the wrong thing, inverting the values of God, this is where it leads. Listen to what it says. To some who were confident in their own righteousness, we would call that today, they were self-righteous. And they looked down on everyone else. To them, Jesus told this parable. He said, two men went up to the temple to pray. One a Pharisee. So here we've got this Pharisee. A Pharisee is one of the religious leaders there in Jerusalem and throughout the land of Israel. So two men went up to the temple to pray. One a Pharisee, a religious man, and the other a tax collector. Now a tax collector during this time, due to the fact that they were Jews that had become employees of Rome for the purpose of collecting taxes from the Jews, they were looked down upon by the Jewish people as being turncoats. They had turned against their own people as far as they were concerned. They were collecting what was taxes for Rome. And so this tax collector now is in comparison to this religious man. One is looked up to as being the spiritual elite, and the other one is looked at as being a turncoat. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed. Now listen to how he prays. The King James says it this way. He prayed thus with himself. And so he prayed. He says, God, I thank you that I am not like other people. And he begins to spell out how he considers himself much better than others. I thank you that I'm not as other people, robbers, evildoers, or adulterers, or even as this tax collector. How would you like to be at the altar here praying and have the pastoral staff, the board of deacons, people that are in spiritual leadership come walking by while you're praying and you are crying out your eyes to God, and they would say, boy, I'm sure glad I'm not like you are. Robbers and thieves and adulterers and, you know, even as this dirty tax collector, I thank God I'm not like any of you. Well, that is exactly what Jesus is telling here took place on the street corner. He says, I fast twice in the week. Now he begins to brag about his spiritual walk. I fast twice in the week. I give tithe of all that I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance, the least likely of the two. This one that was despised by every Jew for being a turncoat. But the tax collector stood at his distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but he beat upon his breast and said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And then Jesus went on to say, I tell you, this man, this tax collector, rather than the other, the Pharisee, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who will humble themselves will be exalted. Friends, when you major on minors, here's what happens. We tend, when we do so, to overlook our own sin and see the sins of others. We see our strengths while ignoring our many, many weaknesses. And I believe that is one of the reasons why Satan loves to get us majoring on minors. My father would often say to us, we were trying to make up our mind and decisions in life, what should be done. He would ask us the question, will this matter 100 years from now? Will this make any difference when 100 years passes by? Well, if not, maybe then it should not be our highest priority in life if it's not going to matter 100 years from now. You see, the Pharisees, they majored on minors. They took little things and they made them big because it was easy for them then to compare themselves to others and say, look what I do. I count out the fennel seeds. I cut out and separate out of all these little seeds, look at, you know, I don't cheat God out of anything. And God's from heaven's looking down saying, you've got it all inverted. At the same time, while they are majoring on minors, they begin to minor on majors. Look at the last part of that verse. 23, Matthew 23:23. He says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tenth of your spices, your mint, your dill, your cumin, and you count them out meticulously. You spend all your time doing that. But you have neglected the more important matters of the law. Justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former." Notice here Jesus said, you should have done the other. You should have not only been paying the tithe, but you should have done that which was even in a higher category in the eyes of God, the more important matters of the law. Those of you that are reading from the King James Version, the King James says, the weightier matters of the law. Jesus is simply saying there are some things that are so important you dare not let them go by. And he is saying you really can accomplish both. It's not one or the other. He is saying you should have paid your tithe, but you should not have overlooked the more important, the weightier matters in the eyes of God. The Message translation reads like this on this same portion of Scripture. Let me read it to you. It says, "You're hopeless, you religion scholars and Pharisees, frauds. You keep meticulous account books, tithing on every nickel and dime you get. But on the meat of God's law, things like fairness and compassion and commitment, the absolute basics, you carelessly take it or leave it. Careful bookkeeping is commendable, but the basics are required. Do you have any idea how silly you look? Writing a life story that's wrong from start to finish, nitpicking over commas and semicolons. Yes, woe upon you Pharisees and you other religious leaders, hypocrites, for you tithe down to the last mint leaf in your garden, but ignore the important things, justice and mercy and faith. Yes, you should tithe, but you shouldn't leave the more important things undone." While they were so caught up in trying to look in the eyes of others that they were hyper-spiritual, they were so busy counting out their little fennel seeds, their little dill seeds, that when someone had been beaten and left alongside the road, the Bible tells us that the priests and the Levite, the religious ones, they walked by on the other side. They didn't want to bother with it. Jesus said, "You've got this all wrong." And you know the story. The Samaritan, the least likely of all, was the one that stopped and ministered to this man that had been beaten and left for dead along the road. He said, "You need to take and apply yourself to justice." He said, "That's very highly valued by God. Justice is acting equitably to all. It is hurting no one, neither by words nor by actions or deeds. It is not showing partiality based upon color, based upon wealth, or based upon any other denominator of man. Justice," he said, "God values justice. You're so busy counting out your seeds, you're forgetting all about justice." He goes on to say, not only justice is valued by God, but so is mercy. Mercy is compassion. It is loving kindness to all. He said, "You have forgotten what God expects about the widows, that you are to care for the widow, you're to care for the fatherless, the stranger, the debtor, the enemy that comes against you. You're to love even your enemies. You are so busy counting out the seeds and saying, 'Look at me, how spiritual I am. I have not cheated God out of one single seed.' And you have left mercy and justice in the dust of time." He said, "God values justice and mercy and faithfulness." Faithfulness has been defined as moral conviction. It is the fidelity to promises. It is standing by your word. When you say you will do something, you do it. And you stand by the things you have promised in life. You see, the Pharisees, they minored on majors as well. And to the scribes and the Pharisees, it became so that outward appearance was all that mattered. Look at Matthew chapter 23, verses 24 to 27. Jesus went on. He said, "You blind guides, you strain out a gnat but swallow a camel." He said, literally, you're so careful, you want to make sure that there is no little gnat on the inside of your water glass, but in so doing, you get so caught up in that, you swallow a camel. And that's some pretty big visualization that Jesus is giving. He says, "Woe to you, danger is coming, judgment's coming. Woe to you, teachers of the law, and Pharisees, you hypocrites, you two-faced people. You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence." Blind Pharisees. He goes on, he says, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside also will be clean. Woe to you, judgment's coming, teachers of the law, Pharisees, you hypocrites, two-faced actors. You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. Now let me give you three examples. Back in 1982, I was ministering down in Paraguay, along with another team from the church here. And they decided that they would bring us out into the bush, and they were going to have a celebration prior to our last service together. And so we went out into the bush, and they literally killed the fatted calf. They went out in their flock, they killed and butchered, and there was this big tub of bloody meat. And this was the gift to all of us. They were going to make a wonderful meal for us. And so I watched. They take this bloody chunks of meat, each one of them about the size of a roast, and they put it on a skewer, and then they began to turn it in the fire, and it was marvelous. You talk about having a feast out in the middle of nowhere. And then they brought to us lemonade. Now, the outside of the glass was pristine and clean. It was absolutely, they'd given all concern to make sure we were guests, and they were putting on, you know, the very best for us, and how much we appreciated that. And so they brought, after we'd been eating and eating and eating this salty meat, they brought lemonade in this very clean cup on the outside. I looked into the cup of this lemonade, and it was swimming. It was alive with mosquito larvae. And I'm telling you, it was a sight to behold. And so I would wait until our host would look the other direction. I'd take the cup and I'd look and I'd go, whoosh. And they'd say, "He's thirsty, fill him up again." And so they'd fill it up again, and I'd wait for the appropriate moment, and I'd throw it over my shoulder, hoping I'm not hitting anybody behind me. The outside was clean, but what was on the inside, at least for my stomach, would have been sickness and some very, very long nights. In elementary school, my brother Dale and I went over to Tass's store. We had saved up enough money between the two of us. I know this sounds ridiculous this morning, saving up between the two of us enough to buy a bottle of Orange Crush soda, but that's what we had to do. And so we saved up enough, and the two of us went into the store, and that was not an ordinary event, just to walk into a store and buy soda. Coming from a very large family, we were very cautious, had to be cautious with money. And so we had saved it up, went in, bought this Orange Crush, and we took it out, and we went to the park, which was just across the street, opened it up, getting ready to take the first swallow, and I said to Dale, "Stop!" And he stopped just before it came to his mouth. And I looked, and there was a dead mouse on the inside of the Orange Crush. Yeah, that's what we said. Oh. Clean on the outside, death on the inside. Now, with that in mind, Jesus said, you can wash a glass on the outside, but that does not mean that the contents on the inside are clean. He went on, and Jesus gave an example. He said, you're like a bunch of whitewashed tombs. You are white and clean on the outside, but on the inside, you're full of dead man's bones. There's death on the inside. He said, you're so cautious about things that really aren't that important to God, and the things that are important to God, you minimize, and you live your lives all for the outside. See, friends, Christian life is not a show, nor is it some kind of performance. God does not judge like men judge. We judge by the outward appearance because that's all we have that we can judge by. Whereas God looks beyond the outward appearance on the outside of the cup, beyond the white and grave markers, and what does he do? He sees and judges the heart of man, our intents, our values, our love for God. There's an author by the name of Jeffrey Stevenson. He wrote the following. He says, you can strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. You can win the battle and lose the war. You can miss the forest for the trees. You can major in minors and minor on majors. You can make mountains out of molehills and molehills out of mountains. You can shout where God whispers, and you can whisper where God shouts. The scribes and the Pharisees, they mistakenly majored on minors, while at the same time they minored on what God calls major. Friends, let me tell you this morning, the key to the successful Christian life, or life in general, marriage, home, or career, is to keep the main thing the main thing. Life's too short to major on minors. Let me ask you, what is it that upsets you? What is it that causes your home to be filled with friction? What is it that upsets you? Let me ask you, what are your priorities? Are they the priorities of God? How do you spend your time, your energy, your finances? It all goes back to the 100-year rule in some ways. Jesus said, you're living your lives, Pharisees. Here's how you're living them. You are majoring on what God calls minor, and you are minoring on what God calls major, and you're all caught up in outward appearance. As long as it looks good from the outside, you think it's okay with God. Life's too short to major on minors. Thanksgiving evening, I had a conversation with Chloe, my granddaughter. Now, those of you that know Chloe, Chloe is going to be 3 months coming up on the 2nd of December. Here's what I told her as she was laying on the floor that night and I was playing with her. I said, Chloe, this is your first Thanksgiving. Matter of fact, not only was Chloe's first Thanksgiving, it was our granddaughter Morgan's first Thanksgiving. Two of them, we were celebrating together. And I said, you know, your great-grandma, which is my mom, she celebrated this year. She was born on November the 16th of 1915. prior to Thanksgiving of that year, just a week before, a little more. So she has celebrated 100 Thanksgivings. I said, you've only got 99 more to catch up with great-grandma. Then I got thinking while I was saying that, you know, my dad would often say, it was one of his favorite sayings, will it really matter 100 years from now? You know, thinking back, I'm sure if my mother would stand here today, and though she's not physically with us, I want you to know she prays through every single service on Sunday. Many of you in this room, she would know you, not by face, but she'd know you by name because she prays for you, because you've gone through struggles, physical, emotional, marital, whatever it is, and she has come alongside and she has prayed. I'm sure if Mom were here today, she would say, you know, I never thought, first of all, she said, I never thought I'd be 100 years old. I've had people tell me, you know, if I would have realized that I would be as old as what I am, I thought I was never going to be around this long, I would have taken better care of myself. I would have taken better care of myself because I'm now paying the penalty for all of that. My mom says, if I don't get to heaven pretty soon, I'm going to have all my friends up there thinking I didn't make it. 100 years. There's a lot of things in 100 years that come and go. Church, you've got to look at things in the long term. I'm sure there's situations and hurts and things that have happened that have all, in some way or another, affected her life even 100 years later. I was talking to her about, she went off, she wanted to become a teacher. And back in those days, you would go off for about 6 months is all it was for training, and they would give you a teaching certificate. And my mother so badly wanted to do that, but she did not have the money to do so. And so she worked for her aunt and uncle for the summer, and they were going to pay enough money to her so she could go off to school that fall. I was just talking to her about this the other day. And she worked all summer like a slave, like an indentured slave to that household. Then it was time for her to go to school, and so she confronted her aunt and said, you know, you made a promise, and the promise was, if I work for you throughout the summer, you will pay whatever this is so that I can go off to school, which is a very small amount of money in those days. Maybe $26, $27, wouldn't you love that? Get your education degree for $26, $27. By the way, she never did get a chance to go because when it came time to collect the money, in the broken Norwegian, my mother's name is Julie, and so they would always, J was sounding like a Y, Julie. And so she said, Julie needs no nussins. Julie doesn't need anything. And so she wasn't paid. Now it's interesting, she had 12 children all total. So she did become a teacher. However, never having the degree. You know, something that happened when she was a kid way, way, way back. I think that at that time you'd probably be 16, maybe 17 years of age, and you go off to be a teacher. But all of that, I could tell. In talking to Mom, I could tell that even though that happened longer ago than most of us are alive in this room, I could tell that it still was a bone of contention. Yuli needs no nussins. You don't have to pay her. She don't need anything. And so she went back home with the rest of the family, never did get a chance to go on to school. Let me just simply say, things that are happening in your life right now, the things you allow to happen to others through your life, 100 years from now may make a difference. Let's be careful we don't major on minors. Let's not minor on majors. And let's make sure we don't go by outward appearance. Because you can be all dressed up, look the role of a sacred saint of God, but be full of death on the inside. Let's be the real deal. Amen, church. Let's be the real deal. Because life is too short to major on minors.